NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
The Kodiak COVID-19 count has risen to 61. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization reported a new case today involving a Kodiak resident who is currently off-island. The status of some of the cases in the Kodiak dashboard, which tracks local cases online, will be changed to reflect the results of a recent investigation among seafood industry workers at the OBI Seafoods plant at Alitac. The investigation revealed that four of those workers are residents of the Kodiak Island borough. Earlier this month, OBI Seafoods confirmed that a COVID outbreak began at his Alitac plant on July 28th. 26 of those cases were reported on August 5th. The company sent those workers off-island for isolation and care. They did not fly through any local airports. The Emergency Operations Organization says all of those cases are no longer active. Currently, only one case is classified active locally. A contact investigation is underway on that case. The State Transportation Commissioner says passenger revenue for the Alaska Marine Highway is down by about 40%, partly due to mechanical problems earlier this year and COVID-19, which idled the Tustamina for a month after the virus spread among crew members. Then, last week, five passengers on the Matanuska tested positive for COVID-19. Commissioner John McKinnon says the ship's canceled sailings will be another big hit to the bottom line.
We're stuck with a ship in Bellingham right now that the crew and no revenue because they're going to sit there for a week while they're tested and wait and then wait to get back up on their schedule. That's a couple $100,000 to sit there for a week with no revenue.
Ferries also have limited passengers on board to allow for social distancing, which has also hurt revenues. Earlier this month, the shortfall prompted cutbacks to the winter ferry schedule. A number of communities were left with no service at all until spring, and were angered that the department gave them less than a week to comment about that.
It's important for us to get that schedule published so people can start booking so that October 1st we've got some passengers ready to get on. We did put it out for a five-day comment period, no question about that. But the reality is we listen to comments year-round.
McKinnon says the limited time for public input didn't seem to hurt response. He says his ferry scheduler had an inch-thick stack of comments, which he will review and likely make some adjustments, but McKinnon says there could be more challenges ahead.
The reality is this year, we're at the mercy of a budget. When the ships sit there for weeks or months at a time with no revenue come in, there's still a big cost associated with every one of those.
Under the proposed winter schedule, the Tustamina will be pulled out of service on its Homer to Kodiak route from October 1st through April. The Kennecott will provide some ferry service until January when it's scheduled to get an overhaul. Port Lyons and Ouzinki, which are close to Kodiak, will not see any service at all this winter. A number of communities from Prince William Sound to Southeast Alaska will lose or experience gaps in service as well. Daily COVID-19 numbers have appeared to drop dramatically on the state's online coronavirus dashboard. On the state's online coronavirus dashboard in recent days, a decline a Department of Health and Social Services post attributes to a recent change in reporting protocol. Speaking during the governor's COVID-19 press conference earlier this week, State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink explained the change.
We are now reporting out test date based on the date that it was collected. And as a result, you're always going to see the most recent dates are going to look low because those are tests that are currently running. So if a test gets reported back to us today, we see when it was collected and we'll report it. And it pops up on that graph based on the day that that test was actually collected.
The DHSS says it averages 3 to 4 days from when a test is administered to when the result comes back. 123 employees at the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport are scheduled to be laid off in October. Another 19 employees at the Fairbanks International Airport will be laid off at the same time. The majority are restaurant and service workers. The corporation that staffs both airports, HMSH Host, furloughed employees at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic in March. According to a company spokesperson, while furloughed employees were unpaid, they did retain their benefits and could use paid time off during the furlough. A spokesperson said they intended to rehire the furloughed employees, but the hit to both travel and hospitality industries during the pandemic has made that impossible. Starbucks, Humpy's Great Alaskan Ale House, Nortonstown Seafood House, and Alaska Dog House are among the restaurants losing employees at the Anchorage Airport. Furloughed employees are expected to be permanently laid off October 15th. One of Alaska's most prolific writers and its preeminent naturalist, Richard Nelson, never published anything about himself, but he was always willing to share stories about his extraordinary journey in Alaska around a campfire or in his extensive letters and journals. Author Hank Leffner worked with Nelson for the last 10 years of his life, recording sounds for Nelson's popular radio program Encounters and for a radio archive maintained by the National Park Service. And when Leffner didn't have his microphone trained on wildlife, he pointed it at Nelson. Leffner has compiled his collection of audio recordings and Nelson's own unpublished writing into a new biography, Raven's Witness, The Alaska Life of Richard Nelson.
I am one of those people who thought Richard Nelson could bend time. Listening to someone talk about a deer for a half hour sounds like a recipe for a nap, but Nels, as he was known around Sitka, could suspend our awareness that time was passing at all.
Just ahead of me, about 40 yards right now, is a Sitka black-tailed deer. It's on the beach along the outer coast of Alaska on a midwinter morning.
He did over 100 episodes of his public radio program Encounters about deer, beaver, whales, glaciers, you name it. The natural world was his palette. For someone with such broad interests, Nelson started out on a narrow track, herpetology, the study of reptiles. But he ended up accepting a job studying sea ice survival for the Air Force in far northern Alaska.
So going to the Arctic was a pretty serious left turn for a budding herpetologist, but his sense of adventure didn't allow him to say no. And what he found when he got to Wainwright is every person in that village was an astute naturalist. And living in Madison, Wisconsin, his obsession with the natural world was a bit freakish. And in Wainwright, he found community, and he was no longer a freak. Everybody there was a naturalist.
That was in 1964. Nelson was 22 years old. Leffner says that Nelson honed his gift for listening among the Inupiaq and developed his craft of writing about what he learned. Nelson died in the fall of 2019, leaving behind boxes and boxes of journals, over 18,000 pages of notes, in Leffner's care, along with his blessing that Leffner write his biography.
The biggest problem really was what to leave out. I started a file early on labeled Must Use Stories, and that was like a 30,000-word document, and I ended up using about 40% of those stories that had to be in the book. And then I did a big revision after the first draft and probably lost another 20%. So it just took a lot of time and a lot of dead ends to figure out what the actual story was.
And it's not just the written word. During his year living among the Inupiaq and Wainwright, Nelson sent home audio letters, re-recorded on reel-to-reel tapes that his father had sent him every Sunday after recording the Green Bay Packers game off the TV. Public broadcasting had not even been created yet, and Nelson was sharing stories that would have all the flavor of Encounters. This is an excerpt of a letter Nelson sent home from Wainwright, where he's cooking up some soup for his dog team.
And tonight was probably the most exotic dog soup I've made yet, which it contained, Friskies and cornmeal, and seal guts, a seal head, seal blood, some caribou meat, and the oil from that comes out of rotten walrus blubber when it thaws.
The Wainwright experience led Nelson to write two major ethnographies, Hunters of the Northern Ice and Shadow of the Hunter, the latter a fictional work that pushed the boundaries of the discipline. In subsequent years, Nelson would shift his attention to the Koyukon peoples of interior Alaska with Hunters of the Northern Forests and his classic Make Prayers to the Raven. Nelson wrote his final two books in Sitka, The Island Within and Heart and Blood, this last book likely the most compassionate study of deer ever written by a person who essentially lived by hunting them. And then he put down his keyboard and picked up a microphone to work on Encounters, which he produced at KCAW. Hank Lentfer, an author in his own right, was Nelson's student in audio. He credits Nelson with initiating his audio awakening.
For me, listening keenly is a reminder of the world in which we are always embedded. And it's so powerful to get out of the human echo chamber, which is what Nels did so well through his writing and his radio work.
There are few wild animals anywhere that have the deer's mix of artfully contained physical power. As I look at the musculature in this deer's shoulders and haunches, combined with explosive speed and almost preternatural grace and elegance.
Raven's Witness, The Alaska Life of Richard K. Nelson, is published by Mountaineers Books and available in bookstores everywhere. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
And by Artinger's Fine Furnishings, proud to offer a variety of sofas and love seats made in Oregon by Stanton, as well as massage and zero-gravity chairs by Human Touch. Find the fabric and style that fits your lifestyle in the store or by special order. Also featuring inviting rugs, lamps, and accessories for your home at Artinger's, 486-5554.